Welcome to Long Shot Leaders. I'm Michael Stein. Today is a bonus episode. I thought it'd be great to share an every man or every woman long shot story. Today, my guest is Tim McLaughlin. He's not a household name. He's a journeyman actor, but he made that leap going from his small town to Hollywood to work steadily as an actor. This leap is difficult for most, and when he did it, his father died, he found himself out of work, and there were other issues along the way. But he overcame, and since, he's been a steady working actor. He's a stone-cold, cool dude. Here is Tim McLaughlin. All right. I'm here with Timothy McLaughlin. He's an actor, and today we're going to talk about the challenges of losing, you know, a parent. And when he lost his parent, his father, it was going through what I would call the trifecta of your lowest point. So, but first let's talk about you and, you know, who you are and tell us a little about yourself.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on, Michael. Sure. I was born in Washington, D.C. and spent most of my life on the East Coast. My younger childhood up in a small town in Connecticut. Moved down to Florida with my family around 1977. And from there, basically just grew up through my teenage years. Took a passion for acting in high school. And onward, I went to the University of Florida to get my Bachelor of Fine Arts degree in theater production and performance. And then I moved to Orlando, Florida after graduating. And from there, I worked at Universal Studios for about 9 years doing all of their stage shows, live performances. From there, I started to do some film work and commercial work, and the resume started to build up to the point where it was time to move out to California. Came out here in about 1999. And my wife and my family, we've been here ever since.
And what got you into acting?
A girl. I mean, flat out, plain and simple, a girl. I was smitten with a girl in high school, wanted to hang out with her. And she was in the drama club. So what was the next move? Join the drama club. So I did. And I didn't really work out with her. So I gained a new passion, and that was acting. So from that point on, it was always kind of sort of in my blood and went on from there, just cultivated and grew.
Let's talk about your dad. You know, what did he think of your choice of being an actor?
My dad supported anything that we wanted to do. I was one of six kids, and in high school, I lost my sister, actually, to a car accident. And I think at that point, my father especially was like, hey, you guys got to live life as if, you know, it's your last day and enjoy whatever you love doing. He was very, very supportive. My father was an athlete growing up. He actually was a semi-pro baseball player. And so he chased his dream to a certain point. And then he met my mom and decided, you know, he wanted to have a family. So that's the direction he changed and took. But he always, always, always supported my passion for acting.
So you decide, you know, you got your career looks like, you know, you're doing well in Florida. So make the big move to LA. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that point, you know, because that's a big move for anybody. You know, you never lived in LA before that.
No, right. I've never been to LA. All the work I got was in Florida, and I did a TV miniseries called From the Earth to the Moon for HBO. And it was produced by Tom Hanks, and I got to work on that production, and it was really great. I also simultaneously was doing a TV series. I had a guest spot on a show called Mortal Kombat, and I also did a low-budget film with a lot of pretty good-name actors in it called The Lay of the Land. It starred Ed Begley Jr. and Sally Kellerman and Tyne Daly, and it was produced by Jonathan Crane, who was connected with all of the John Travolta movies. So when I did that, Jonathan Crane said, hey, come on out here to California. You're going to get a lot of work out here. So that kind of influence from a Hollywood producer sort of, you know, started the ball rolling to get out to California.
Right. Because that is like such a big, people listening, you know, that's a big move for people to like get out of the town, to go to a big city. With that kind of inertia behind you.
Yeah.
So you pack your bags, you go out to L.A., and tell us about that process. What happened?
Oh, it was a crazy process, first of all. I mean, we had a three-year-old son at the time. My wife and I were contemplating whether or not we wanted to make the move. And at one point, we both just said, let's do it. And so it was a process. And we got out here to California. We settled in a town called Santa Clarita, which was about 35 miles north of LA. And we thought that was the best place to raise a kid and or kids, as it ended up happening. And I was close enough to LA and Hollywood, where it was, you know, 45 minute, half hour commute to auditions. So that's where we settled. And we moved out here in 1999. And about 4 or 5 months after we moved out here, the actor strike hit. And when that happened, it just blew everything up and I wasn't able to work anymore. So we kind of said, well, what can we do? And so that's when, you know, I started taking 3-4 jobs, you know, because living out here in California is a lot more expensive than Florida, to say the least. So my wife was staying at home caring for my son, but then she started looking for work as well. And from that point on, I said, okay, I can't do any work because I'm a member of the SAG. So I started putting my son to work. We started going out in auditions and he signed with an agent.
Well, how old was your son at this time?
He was 3.5, 4 years old.
Well, that's resourceful.
Yeah, he was amazing too. I mean, I couldn't believe it. He was booking everything. So they were all obviously non-union jobs and he was non-union, you know, so we kind of took advantage of that. He really clicked well with the camera and being in front of the camera. So we kind of used that as well. And we cobbled together work and auditions through him and stuff. And I think in 2001, late 2000, I think, the strike ended. And right at the same time the strike ended, my mom called me up with the news that my father had cancer. And it was fourth stage. And so just one body blow after another, because, of course, I'm very close with my father. We shared so many passions together, sports and a lot of points of view. And talked an awful lot. And he was the guy that I went to basically all growing up with any kind of troubles or questions, life questions. He was my hero. He was my mentor. So it was a tragic blow. And he chose not to do chemotherapy or anything. He wanted to try a holistic approach. And unfortunately, that did not end up being successful. And in the spring, late spring of 2001, he passed away.
And, but it's just so, if my timing's right, was about 6 to 8 months type of struggle.
It was about 8 months. Yeah. September to May. He passed away in mid-May of 2001. So at that point.
Were you able to go back and visit him during this process?
Yeah, I did. I went back April, late April, and we shared some of our favorite conversations. And we were both NFL fans. So we watched the NFL draft together. And like about 3 weeks later, he was gone. So I did get to spend, I got to spend about 5-6 days with him.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned you shared your favorite conversations because, you know, I lost both my parents. And that's the thing that you miss when your parents are gone. You miss the conversations. The inevitability of life is like that because the simplicity of just being able to have a simple conversation is what you miss the most.
Oh, yeah. Sitting down with my father and having a St. Pauli girl beer was probably some of the best moments I've ever had growing up through college, past college, you know, on into my earlier days of my marriage. And yeah, he would come up because I'd live in Orlando and they live in Naples, Florida. And he'd come up from time to time just to visit and hang out with me. And yeah, it's the times that we spent were just, they're priceless. So that loss really, really left a big hole in my heart and in my soul. And I actually stopped acting for about a year and a half. And it was a tough time. My marriage struggled through that time. We struggled financially through that time. My second son was literally just born months before my father passed. And yeah, and I mean, it was very emotional. It was very emotional. So
people that don't have kids won't understand this, but when, you know, going through the loss and then having financial struggles and then having your second child,
yeah,
that'll rip you and your wife. That's who had the challenges together at that time, because sometimes the couple that have the magical relationships and say, oh, our kids were gifts from God, you know, above and everything. And it's like, you know what? During those incipient stages of the infancy of your child, when they come home, they'll rip you apart. You guys are testing each other going through those times and going through the finances and the loss of your dad. That's intense. How did you try to manage that? How did you get out of that? What were some of the things you did, the modalities?
Boy, oh boy, I'll tell you, the one thing that I have is my wife, who is my best friend and amazing support, basically a rock, you know, somebody that I could hold on to and somebody that was there. And I couldn't have asked for anybody with more emotional support at that time. She was amazing, still is amazing. You know, we've been together for, gosh, we've been married almost 26 years. We've been together 30.
Wow.
So
you look a lot younger.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I may look that way, but I'll tell you, I still feel that old.
So what were some of the things when you guys are going through that crossroads of pain? And obviously you're arguing with her still, as great of a rock as she is.
Oh,
you guys
yeah.
have arguments.
Oh,
what
yeah.
What were some of the things that you guys did to get through that low point?
Well, at that point, she decided, she says, she took an avenue. I'm going to study real estate and I'm going to get my real estate license and I'm going to go this avenue. And so she made a commitment to do that. And I turned to writing. I just started writing. I actually wrote a screenplay and just to be able to put stuff down on paper and have my thoughts, just to be constantly using my brain and not sitting still in that aspect. I mean, I was working 2-3 jobs at the time also, so that was keeping me busy. And we basically, you know, we'd sit down. We're very honest with each other. You know, my wife would sit there and say, okay, we need to do this. Let's do it. And I was, at that point, my emotional life right there, I basically was, whatever you say, you make the choices and the decisions right now, because I'm not capable of making logical decisions sometimes when I get emotional. So she did that, and thank God for that. And we just basically grinded through. We, you know, for 6 months, we just grinded through a lot of work. And then, you know, all of a sudden, she became successful in real estate and she got on with a new home sales company. And at that point, the finances started to get better. And I was taking the boys back out on auditions. And then I said to her, I said, listen, I've got to start studying some more acting. So I actually signed on with an acting coach. And that was the best thing that ever happened to me. I mean, that's when everything turned around, was a fantastic acting mentor by the name of Joe Police. And I joined his acting studio and we started working hard. And out of that, things started to pull out of the hole I was in. And from that point on, it was just, as each year passed, it was getting better and better. So
a good acting coach will, you know, do a lot of emotional work.
Yeah.
You know, and the kids kind of like, you know, a hybrid a psychology session, you know, a gestalt therapy a little bit, going to acting class. I was taking acting classes for a long time. And even when I stopped acting in pockets of, I would say, you know, I'm going to still go back there because I got to get some stuff worked out, you know.
Exactly.
I would kill two birds with one stone.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a great platform for me to get up there on stage and work scenes with other actors. And that started to give me the passion again. It started to give me the drive and the hunger to, this is why I came out here. And so then I started to focus and get more focused on my family. I'd have conversations at night, laying in bed with my father, you know, in my head. And what would he do in my situation? And these words would just come into my head and my father's voice would be attached to it. And he'd say, hey, listen, you know, you didn't come out to California to wallow and feel sorry for yourself. This is what you and I had talked about on many conversations that we've had, what it takes to make it in the acting industry and to be a successful career for you. He says, so get off your ass. And I just kept hearing that voice, kept telling me, this is what you have to do. So yeah, he was there. He was there in my head.
So before you got out of this tailspin, real quick, you got 3 jobs.
Yeah.
You know, you got a second child, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're trying to writing a screenplay can be brutal, and writing anything from start to end is a brutal process, you know, for most.
Yeah.
And to have 3 jobs and then find the time to do that.
Exactly. You know, not a lot of sleep.
You just forge through that, you know?
Yeah.
I guess that is that what were you doing for work? What were those three jobs?
Oh, God. I worked at a flower shop. I was delivering flowers from 8 a.m. till 4. And then I would deliver pizzas at night for Domino's from about 5 or 6 till about midnight. And then I think like 2 or 3 days a week, I was up at 4 a.m. Delivering newspapers to the newspaper racks. I mean, I was taking just anything I could do to create, you know, money. And some days I would work all three jobs. And those days I wasn't good to do anything. I'd just sleep and eat. But then other days it would be just the two jobs. So I'd get a little bit of sleep. But a lot of times when I come home, I would be still wound up. So I'd sit at the computer for a couple hours and just start typing away. But yeah, that lasted for about 6 months.
You know, the writing that you can come up with when you're that sleep deprived, that's a whole other, not that I suggest any writer to do that. I mean, because I've written over 8 screenplays. And for me, being an ADHD guy, it can be brutal. But when you're tired and you're working on fumes, you might be able to come up with something interesting.
Well, it's not even that I was tired. It's that I was still so wound up. I had so many thoughts because when I'm out delivering pizzas, it's just you in the car. And sometimes I listen to music, but most of the times I would be thinking through all of the scenes that I was creating, all the characters that I was creating for the particular script I was writing at the time. And sure. I couldn't wait. Sometimes I couldn't wait to get home to put it down, you know, right. Because I didn't want to forget it. So I literally would have scenes just running through my head. And as soon as I'd get home, you know, my wife, she'd be in bed. And I would just go right to the computer and start tapping away just to get the thoughts down. And then when I would have a day off, I would spend the day just rereading the thoughts and transposing it into script and into scenes.
So you're getting out of this low point. What was the inciting incident that helped you really get out of there? And what did you enter into that kind of, you know, out of that tailspin?
We were living in it was a 2-bedroom apartment, but it was pretty small for the four of us. And my wife she got a job that was a very good paying job. She was working with a new home sales company. And so it literally went from having paycheck to paycheck kind of an income to, wow, we have this surplus now of money. So I think that the thing that really pulled us out was when we moved out of this very meager apartment and moved into a nicer place. And just that transition into that location, into that, lifted us up kind of mentally. I mean, it's difficult if you're living in a really just I don't want to say a low income housing, but if you're living in that kind of a situation and all of a sudden you go from that to, wow, I'm in a nice, clean, really nice house with a nice neighborhood and nice schools the kids are going to. And just that move, physical environment change, really gave us a shot in the arm.
Yeah. Right. And that changed a lot as far as your career after that.
Absolutely. From that point on, I was studying a lot more. I was doing a lot more acting classes with Joe Police. And from that point, I signed with a manager and she started getting me a lot of work. And I think it was like 04, 05, I started to book some television shows. I got on an episode of Everybody Hates Chris and Monk and CSI, you know, throughout the 2000s. I was doing a lot of live stage shows at the acting studio. And things just started to roll. And I was going out on a lot more auditions. I was also still in the process of taking my kids out on auditions. I mean, they were actually pretty successful in the commercial world. They were getting a lot of work. So it started to get super busy for us.
Yeah, I've seen that on your IMDb. It's you stay pretty active. What do you got planned next?
Well, COVID hit, of course. That threw everybody for a loop. You know, the pandemic absolutely just shut down the industry in general. And I had two projects that I had just wrapped up on. One of them is finished now, and the other one is still in limbo because there's just, whenever you're doing a film or a project, sometimes legal issues come in there, and sometimes the films never get to see the light of day. And so one of them is in that category, and the other one just finished, and we're hoping to get that to film festivals. It was a really great short.
What's the name of that?
It's called Fleeced. And I play a character who is actually kind of like a Rowan Atkins, Mr. Bean character. So little dialogue, lots of funny visual stunts. So we're hoping to get that out. And I am slotted to play a role in an upcoming film called Warrior of Eight Flags. Now, that was supposed to film, I think, last summer, and that just got completely shelved while the pandemic was happening. And in the process, I believe they're doing some rewrites. So we're just waiting for that to come out. And as soon as that happens, they can put together a production schedule, and we're off and running there. So, yeah.
Awesome. Well, Timothy, thanks you for sharing your story. There's, you know, a lot of people out there that are trying to make the move, or they're going through a low point. Everybody acting is a tough gig. And there's a lot of great actors that are making a steady living that get over that hump. And you going through that, your dad dying, and then you got out of work, and then you had the writing strike, and then all that. So I appreciate you sharing your story today, and yeah, thank you for joining us.
No, absolutely. Enjoyed talking with you, Michael. So thanks for having me on, man.
That was Tim McLaughlin. Super cool dude. A guy steadily doing his thing, overcoming obstacles to try to work in an industry that is the most competitive on the planet. I think it's important, and there's value there for other people that want to make that leap to hear other stories like this so they know that they're not alone and there is a chance for them to have steady work. And even though they might not be Tom Cruise, that they have a chance to continue with something that's viable and still have their passion making these things happen. This is our first bonus episode. We'll be doing these like one Saturday a month, so look out for these in the future. Thanks. See you next time.
All right. If you want to find out more about our show, go to longshotleaders.com. If you want to be a part of something special and get your daily dose of inspiration, perspiration, exasperation, knowledge, and creativity, if you haven't done so already, subscribe to our podcast. And if you like what we do, share our show with your family and your friends, and put some positivity out there in the world. Thank you for listening. And until we meet again on the next episode, I bid you adieu. Where did I get French from?